Welcome to The Human Beat. I'm Roger Rocca. The historical record tells us that the Cascadia subduction zone off our coast has generated earthquakes and tsunamis that have hit Oregon, Washington, and California 42 times over the last 10,000 years. OSU coastal hazard specialist Patrick Corcoran says it's going to happen again, but he says the point is not to be scared, but to be prepared. Corcoran recently returned from a second trip to Japan.
I came back from Japan somewhat depressed, seeing all of the stuff they're doing in their mode, and then come back and see what we're not doing in ours. Basically, since we cannot afford and will not permit the Japan solution of engineered solutions, that leaves very few alternatives. The obvious one is to evacuate out of the low spots as fast as you can. So evacuation drills, wayfinding, refining those evacuation routes. In my mind, that is our only strategy that we have. Parallel to focusing on evacuation, not engineering, is let's be very cautious about the precious people and valuable things that we site in tsunami inundation zones. I learned at a tsunami conference in December that along the entire Oregon coast, 36% of all of the developable land in the tsunami inundation zones is in Clatsop County, coastwide. So Clatsop County is poised to put the most precious people and valuable things in tsunami inundation zones of anybody along the Oregon coast. Now, our county commissioners have tabled indefinitely the consideration of a tsunami hazard overlay zone for the county plan that would indicate where the tsunami is mapped and things like that. That was politically just too untenable. Coos County has passed such a land use plan. Progressive Coos County is leaving Clatsop in the dust on that one. It's the basic thing that we can do is to take a systematic approach. Again, moving from an individual response to a systemic response. That's a community response. That's county, that's municipalities, and everybody within it. I am most inspired and I am happiest when I'm in Manzanita talking with the Nehalem Bay Emergency Volunteer Corps. In a town of 500 people, they have two dozen highly motivated, sophisticated volunteers that are different task force on marketing, education, wayfinding, and route finding. Manzanita got a grant for $20,000 to develop a mass sheltering plan. How are they going to accommodate residents and neighbors? And they had Catholic Relief Services come out, develop the plan just 2 weeks ago. They put up some tents to kind of try this out. Manzanita and their fewer than 1,000 population, in my view, is putting to shame the majority of communities on the Oregon coast, certainly Clatsop County. There aren't as many people in all of Clatsop County with 36,000 people working as volunteers in a focused way on preparedness is the community of 500 people in Tillamook County there in Manzanita. We can do this. It takes highly motivated people. It takes resources. It mostly takes leadership. It mostly takes someone saying, look, it's an inconvenient truth, but this will happen again. After it happens, the post-mortem, the evaluation of what did we know and when did we know it, is going to be brutal. Mm-hmm. We've known 1995 was the first year that an official tsunami line was written on a map in the state of Oregon. So although we knew about the hazard before then, let's say 1995 was the first time that somebody has to stop denying they didn't know about it was 1995. That's when the 379 line went in. In the early 2000s, the initial maps, tsunami inundation maps, were developed. Those were refined in the mid-2000s. And by 2010, the entire Oregon coast had new tsunami inundation maps. Very sophisticated, the best in the world. So after the next one, and there are investigations about who knew what and when, I think 2010 is going to be seen as a very pivotal year. After 2010, there's no leader, elected or otherwise, that can say they didn't know. What we have to say is we knew. It was mapped. We chose not to develop policies to influence what goes on in the inundation zone. And we loaded it up because that's where our space was. That's going to be a real brute. And by the way, federal government give us hundreds of billions of dollars to basically make 101 pretty again. This is such a dead-end kind of strategy that I'm starting to lose patience, as you can kind of tell. I mean, it's been 10 years of conversation and cajoling but I think I'm feeling now that it has become professionalized a little bit, you know, with Tiffany and the emergency managers and the police and fire, it's like everybody else is forgotten about it. Oh, that's professional.
They'll take care of it.
I pay taxes. They better take care of it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That is so not going to happen. That's what visits to Japan really ground me when I'm talking to a mayor whose wife died and he didn't take the time to go look for her. A week later, when he was going as the mayor, going through the list of names that were identified as dead, he saw his wife's name. Mm-hmm. He knew he didn't put that, and he looked, and his 12-year-old son had put his mother's name on the dead list of people, and the mayor seeing that, I mean, just the personal stories of grief. Another horrible one to my dog lovers out there and my pet lovers. I love pets too. We have to be realistic about things. For example, there was in one of the memorials in Japan a little video clip of a fellow. He and his wife were 79 when the earthquake happened. They evacuated out of their house. They went to their neighborhood high ground with all the other neighbors, and they were fine. Except his wife snuck off the hill and went back home to get the dog, and they were both killed. Yeah. And so now he talks about he's learned to cook, and when he makes a particularly tasty dish, he takes that bowl over to his wife's shrine in the house and lets her know that she should be proud of him for a dog. Another thing was in the evacuation shelters. We had a very interesting person kind of give us some scenarios. And she said, okay, you're in an evacuation shelter. Should evacuation shelters accommodate pets? Oh, yes, we love our dogs. We're all like raising our hands. Okay, evacuation shelters have very limited water. Who gets water? Your dog? Or that child? Who gets water? Your dog to drink? Or do we use that to wash our hands so we don't give everybody dysentery in the week or 10 days that we're going to be living cheek by jowl? You start to really get some of that reality in some of those conversations, and it clears a lot of the bull away. And so, you know, that's the kind of thing going to Japan that I'm seeing we're missing here. We don't have that visceral connection to this event.
Right.
It's going to be gnashing of teeth after the next one happens. My job is education, not regulation. I would like to see us align our behavior with what we know is going to happen. And again, moving from the individual to the system and including leadership and economic development on the Oregon coast. That's where we're left right now. We can't afford to engineer ourselves behind concrete, so we have to have a different approach. And I think another thing I hear a lot about from leadership as well is, you know, the coast has to be open for business. Well, yeah, the coast is open for business. I'm interested in the coast being open for business for 1,000 years, okay? Lisbon, Portugal is one of my communities that I think about when I think about the Oregon coast. In 1755, they had a huge earthquake and tsunamis. After that, they came up with a progressive development plan. I think that was their terms back in that era, to basically rebuild but avoid putting valuable things and precious people in the most vulnerable spots. They did. It's a wonderful, it's one of the oldest cities on the planet. It is absolutely great. They have a long-term view. I've had people tell me that we've got all our infrastructure already built in these places. Yeah. It's basically 100 years old. It was around 1900 in the 19-teens that our dikes and jetties and rail and the real infrastructure went in on the Oregon coast. If someone is so short-sighted to say we can't possibly alter our development pattern because we've been doing it for 100 years, that's classic American think. You know, we need to travel to other places that have had a presence for 1,000 years and see what they do. This is exactly the time. Our infrastructure is starting to need to be redone. Our jetties in Warrenton, for example. Now is the time to build our infrastructure like we know we're going to get earthquakes and tsunamis. Mm-hmm. I totally let us off the hook for the way we've developed. It's obvious you want to develop on flatland by water. We didn't know when the Warrens and the Astors and the others rolled into town. We do now.
Sure. Prior to that, the idea was the closer to the water, the better, because it was a beautiful place to be.
And transportation. And there are things that need to be on the water. The port has to be on the water. You have to receive fish on the water, and processing uses the water. We have so many things in vulnerable places that don't need to be there. And we're proposing developments of high-intensity housing in tsunami inundation zones, and there's no conversation about that.
Yeah.
I think we need to start electing people that have a clue about this. I know of no Coastal Caucus member who has been to Japan or Chile to see what we're going to look like afterwards. I think there have been trade missions to China and stuff like that, but I certainly haven't heard of any. I think that this is one of those things that's so difficult. How are you going to, like, say we have developable land in Clatsop County on one hand, and we have a housing shortage on the other hand? How is a leader going to say, we can't put these people in the inundation zone? That's leadership. The developers aren't going to do it. The realtors aren't going to do it. And so I think in this case, again, we haven't experienced this since Western settlement. If a Japanese from Wekusantakata drove down the Oregon coast, they would be aghast.
Mm-hmm.
Like, really? All those towns are there? Where are your seawalls? So Americans are clever but not very wise. And I think we're manifesting that in spades all along the coast. There are millions of people living on subduction zones all across the planet. Japan, Chile, wonderful, beautiful places, thriving communities. I mean, this isn't like you got to move. We just have to live like we know about our environment. You know, we're all eco-groovy Oregonians with, you know, Keens and fleece. But we're living on the edge of the inundation zone here like we have no clue about it. So there's a middle ground between shutting everything down and sticking our heads in the ground, which we're doing now. And I think that is an awareness that's articulating what's going on. I think we do have to give ourselves a little bit of space because this has kind of been sprung on us. I get that. But like I say, that's been since 1995. And we have a 37% chance in the next 50 years of getting number 43.
We've been sort of like some of the visitors who come and don't pay any attention to tides and do things that get themselves into real trouble because they think the water is always going to be where it is.
And don't we make fun of them?
And we make fun of them, but we're sort of in the same position in a way.
Because
we haven't experienced that.
Yeah. And so one option is, what a great excuse for us not to do anything. That's the path we're taking, or minimal stuff as federal grants come available. I mean, the state of Oregon has spent, I think, zero, except for retrofitting schools, you know, in this effort.
You know, if you had the wand, what are the things that we should be doing? What would your advice be to elected officials? What do we need to do?
I think we need to distinguish the tsunami threat from all others. When this Cascadia happens, I mean, maybe 1,500 people will die from the earthquake. And you die from earthquakes by buildings falling on top of you. So the built environment. The earthquake is all about engineering and seismic code. Tens of thousands are going to die from the tsunami in the 30 minutes. So when you look at what the threat is, it's not the earthquake, it's the tsunami. And it's a huge threat. And so we need to look at those tsunami inundation zones, in my opinion, as the dangerous zones that they are. And there already is prohibitions against putting fire stations and hospitals and things like that at a certain area close to the beach. But I think we should look far more closely at the kinds of things that are going in tsunami inundation zones. You know, we have in Clatsop County all of our assisted living facilities, all of our pharmacies are in tsunami inundation zones. So I think by looking at those and imagining our communities without that area to function, what are we going to need? And we don't do that. Mm-hmm. It's tough. You know, this is not something the business community, I think, in error, is excited about. Everybody knows we get these now. And if people are visiting the Oregon coast and your business is got its head in the sand, that's not a good message. If your business is like, yep, we know about that. I've instructed businesses just to have a simple policy of, if you have a business in the inundation zone, you have employees. As a condition of employment, the employee before their first day of work must go from the till to the hill. And by that, I mean from the business to the assembly site that you would go to in the event of a large earthquake. That way, when any customer comes up and asks anything about tsunami, anything, they can say three sentences. The first, I don't know about all that science. The second, but I've been to the assembly area from here. Third, if you feel an earthquake, follow me. Now, if I went to any business downtown and I kind of got that standard kind of spiel, I would say this is a community that owns it, frames it, and capitalizes on it. Owns the fact that, yep, they do happen here. Where do you think the mountains come from and why it's so beautiful? Frames it like, and we ain't going anywhere because it's awesome and we love our community. And then capitalize on it. I mean, I have the grab beer run like hell shirt that I got from a business in Seaside. So we can get ahead of this and be proactive and let visitors know that, yep, you know, we're fully aware of this. What's your concern? We have lots of options. We have motels in Clatsop County in inundation zones, out of inundation zones. Because the other piece of this is it's inappropriate for me or kind of anybody else to say, Roger, you should be afraid of this and you shouldn't buy a house on the beach. No. People have different risk tolerances. Mm-hmm. And so to me, what's important is for each individual or couple or family to understand, and are we comfortable in our house here? Some people like it up there with the view of this. Others like it right on the beach. And again, that's okay with me as long as they know. And at the time of purchase of a house, that's not always conveyed. And so there is a level of community responsibility, I think, that we have to have. And I think the counties or the communities that do it first are going to get the market share. I think of Manzanita. If I was telling somebody on the coast who was in the valley, said, we want to go to the coast, but we're really paranoid about tsunamis. I'm like, well, that's too bad. I hope you get over that. But I don't know. I'd go to Manzanita if you're looking for a community that's prepared. So I think it can be a virtuous cycle where coastal communities are actually vying to be as responsible as they can about this in order for visitors to be comfortable in their communities. There's no guarantee of life safety wherever you go.
Right.
Here on the coast, you know, I think we've run out of our grace period of we didn't knows. The maps are now 7 years old, and we're continuing to plow ahead pretty much business as usual. Now, there are a number of exceptions, and there's a number of good things that are going on. I ask myself, are we preparing commensurate with the risk? And if the risk is a 10, we're preparing it a 2, and we're kind of patting ourselves on the back for that. So we got to keep our eyes on the prize. And I think soft solutions, I think cheap solutions, that's why this evacuation strategy is so much more Oregonian than the engineering strategy. You know, we're keeping our natural environment. We're going to make evacuation routes and systems of trails that people can get to safety. It's cheaper. It's more aesthetically pleasing. Put some Boy Scout troops to work clearing blackberry brambles. We don't need to do what Japan does, but we've got to do something.
Right.
And we can't just continue business as usual here or the coast won't be open for business. So I propose a 1,000-year vision for the coast, which means that now is the time to really look at infrastructure, what needs to be in the inundation zones, what doesn't. Again, looking at things like we have no pharmacy that's not in a tsunami inundation zone. I'm not saying tomorrow go put one somewhere. I'm saying as we think in our planning, would it not be okay also to have some things? As we're developing, things we could use on high ground would be this list. Mm-hmm. And prioritizing put things on high ground that you're going to need. It's weird. In Oregon, we don't have earthquakes, sort of quote unquote. So the good news is we don't have to worry about them a lot. The bad news is all of our seismically unsound buildings are still standing and being used. In places like California or Japan or Chile, they've fallen down in previous earthquakes. And what's left are the ones that are more beefily built. And so another thing about our culture is we have this huge stock of unreinforced masonry buildings, oftentimes located in those flat riverine soils that are unconsolidated and give quite a jiggle during earthquakes. So I think that we have a whole lot of work to do, whether you're an Astoria community or a Seaside community or a Tillamook community or an Escoin community.
So individually, we need to know if the ground starts shaking what we would do from wherever we are or wherever we live, if we choose to live near the ocean.
Which then, I do.
Then we need to know exactly where we can go from there.
The good news is the ultimate siren is the earthquake. You feel a long earthquake, that is your warning. Your warning about what? If you're not in a tsunami inundation zone, that's a whole level of concern you don't have to worry about. If you're in the tsunami inundation zone when the earthquake happens, you got to get out of it. Mm-hmm. And you've got 15 to 30 minutes before waves start showing up on the outer beaches. And that's, there's just enough time to get to where you have to get to on the Oregon coast if you know where that is before the earthquake happens. There's no time to pull out maps and this and that. So
know ahead of time.
So as individuals, there's kind of three things. One is know the difference between a local and a distant event. The tsunamis, quote-unquote tsunamis, that we get most frequently are like in 2011 when somebody else, unfortunately, bless their souls, had a subduction zone earthquake that sent a tsunami only to us, which again, like we talked about, by the time it gets here is really pretty small and is no big deal. We need as individuals to understand those scenarios are not a big deal. Wolf Blitzer says a tsunami's coming and we don't go clamming that day, but we just stay home and get off the streets because people who aren't as informed think they have to drive to Portland. You need to know the difference between that and the local one. And the local one begins with the earthquake, and that's the conversation I'm talking about. It begins with an earthquake. That means you need to work. The earthquake starts the tsunami, so that might be an easy way to think about it. The shifting of the earth is making the tsunami happen. So if you're feeling an earthquake, the tsunami is being generated, and it's on its way. So that's individuals. The first thing you need to know then, local and distant. Don't sweat the distant. The locals, your warning is the earthquake. The second thing you need to know is, where's that high ground again? If it is a long earthquake and I am in the inundation zone, where do I need to get from here? Real important to know. The third thing is the first thing you're going to think about, and that's your family, your loved ones. So it is important now to have conversations. I mean, family plan, I mean, that's one way to think about it. I think of some three-ring binder that no one's going to do, but conversations and agreements with your family members. Next time you're having dinner, what would you do if an earthquake happened? What would you do? And not necessarily like, oh, that's right answer, that's wrong answer, but explore where your family's at. The most important, the best case scenario you can have next time is when the earthquake happens, all your loved ones duck cover and hold on so the things don't crunch them on the head. If they're in the inundation zone, they brush themselves off and get out of it, stay there overnight, and meet their people the next day. If five people in the family, all separated. Like, look, right now, I mean, families are often here, there, and everywhere, right? Two options. One, go find everybody. Get in the car and go find the kids and wind up dead, which happened in Japan. Tragic stories. Or trust that all of your loved ones know what to do. Duck, cover, hold, get to high ground, stay there overnight, reconnect the next day. How awesome would it be to have a family of five and the next day everybody comes back together for a big hug?
Yeah.
That's going to be the minority of families unless you have conversations, because what's going to happen is, again, you lose that 100 points of IQ and we turn into heroes. That same energy that allows a parent to pick a car up off their kid puts them behind the wheel driving through inundation zones to save kids who've been evacuated by their teachers.
Right.
So we got to talk this through and understand what our loved ones would do. If we have confidence that our loved ones know what to do when this happens, that's going to be so precious to us. That's going to be the one thing we wish we would have done, is to have the conversation about what to do and where to go.
And meanwhile, collectively as a region, we need to not put things in the inundation zone anymore.
We need to be very careful about what we put there. I mean, I'm not an absolutist. I'm not about that. I mean, right now it's just willy-nilly. If it's zoned for it, fine, there we go. Do we want to have a hazard overlay zone? No. Okay, so therefore you can. So it's that level of casual development in inundation zones that I think we will, fewer people will die if we stop doing that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've not used that kind of language very much for the last 10 years, but, you know, again, just coming back, I'm grounded again in just the soul-crushing sadness and trauma of this event. And so I think it's imperative that we not lose that. Always when there's an event somewhere in the world that gets people's attention and then there's a fade away, we're fading from the Japan event.
Sure.
And we're getting closer to ours. And that keeps me up at night. So it's a fine line between being Danny Downer, you know, and having conversations like this, but also giving people the 2x4 to the forehead. It's like I've seen the future, you know, going to Japan and seeing right after it happened and then seeing the build. And I'm seeing our future. So when I'm driving around here, these are the before shots, Roger. You know, as I drive down the Oregon coast, these are the before shots. There will be aftershots. And so how do we make the after photo be as less fatal as it can be? And, you know, if we could focus on how we want the outcome to be after next time, we'd do things a lot differently than we do now. I realize it's really tough. very few people have kind of seen that. And of course I've seen it. And so I'm all energized about it. And I understand not everybody has that or shares that, but we have that 10,000 years of evidence that says this has happened over 40 times. This will happen again. We will be on some level of preparedness spectrum when it happens. Right now we're pretty low. We've known about it for 15 years. We have to quadruple what we've done in the last 15 years in the next 15 years. And I don't sense we're on any kind of pace like that. So I'm here to encourage people to don't obsess about this like me, or you don't get invited to cocktail parties, but do incorporate this into your thinking. We wear our seatbelts, you know, we have batteries for winter storms. You know, this is a high bar of preparedness. It primarily, for me, circles around the tsunami threat. There's not that much we can do about the earthquake threat. You can retrofit your house and tie your hot water tank, you know, to the wall, but that's about it. For the tsunami, there's so much more we can do. In policy, avoid putting things there. Individuals, knowing when you're in the inundation zone and where the escape route is and where to stop. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've never seen a sign that says, stop, you're safe. It's always arrows and pointing and stuff like this. We have to live like people. We're not perfect, but there are examples around the globe of people who live in places just like this and who live and thrive and do very well. But they're doing intentional things that we're not, that allows them to do that in the long term. The hard part about this, again, is the concept. Once I got past the concept and was like, okay, I need to expect this is going to happen, then I found myself driving down the road going, if it happened right now, what would I want with me? And so I've developed a go bag, a bag that I have in my truck right now that is a medium-sized backpack. It's not that big, and it answers the questions. If I happened to be out on the road in between landslides when this thing happened and had to spend a day or two, you know, in the car in the ditch, what would I want to have with me?
Mm-hmm.
And what I have is rubberized Grindon's rain gear. So hat, boot, gloves, raincoats, shoes, I have boots, stuff that I would need to keep warm. If it's a winter day, I have clothes that will keep me warm on a winter day.
Mm-hmm.
That's essentially the most important thing. I also have like a water purifier and some matches and kind of that other kind of ancillary stuff. But the big thing is if you're caught with your car between landslides for overnight, you're going to need warmth. So I would encourage people just to think about preparedness being on a continuum. You've got extra batteries for the winter storm. Great. For the tsunami, you might want to throw some more extra batteries in there. For the winter storm, you have a little bit more in your pantry. You kind of cycle out stuff. You got a lot of SpaghettiOs and stuff for those kind of unforeseen events. Well, to the extent you can afford it, buffer that pantry a little bit for that preparing to the tsunami standard. You have a first aid kit at home. Yeah, make sure that that's got plenty of stuff in it. So the preparing for the earthquake and tsunami isn't as hard in the particulars as it is to motivate yourself to do so.
That was Patrick Corcoran, Coastal Hazard Specialist for OSU. You can find tsunami inundation and evacuation maps on the web. Just search for Clatsop County Tsunami Map, Tillamook County Tsunami Map, or Pacific County Tsunami Map. This has been The Human Beat. I'm Roger Rocca. Thanks for listening.